Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, even just for college, I mean, I think we've saved about $23,000 so far in 529 accounts. But, you know, there's always need more things to spend money on in the future.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I just wanted to give a shout out for anyone who is interested in being a guest. It is completely anonymous, so we'll let you choose a fake name and we will hide identifiable information so you can come on the show and share freely. It is a full hour to an hour and a half with me, Barbara, and we'll do a deep dive on your finances, where you're doing well, where maybe you're struggling, and come up with a game plan for how to reach your financial goals. To be a guest, you just need to put a submission in either on Instagram or on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com, and you just need to be a female. As we've said before, this podcast is produced with Amy, Alex, and myself, so an all-female team, and our goal is to help improve financial education amongst women. So that is why we interview women about their finances. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in being a guest, please put in a submission on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com, or send us a message on Instagram.
Thank you so much for listening to the Future Rich podcast. This is part 2 of a follow-up with a recurring guest, Minnie. Part 1 aired on Friday, July 11th. In that episode, Barb and Minnie discussed her robust emergency fund, the impact of income fluctuations on her financial stability, the relief that comes from student loan forgiveness, retirement planning, along with childcare and medical costs. If you haven't listened to that episode, please listen to that episode before you listen to this one. That is episode 288, and it aired on Friday, July 11th. Thank you so much.
My spouse, most of his current 401k is with his old employer, right? And he hasn't rolled it over yet. And so he's talking to the like company that his current 401k is with. And that's like, they're like, oh, you know, they have like a $250,000 threshold, but if you roll into an IRA, they invest, you know, they kind of do their thing, but it's a 1% fee, which I know is like standard in that world. Yeah. Right. But also from my husband's family, that's kind of the world they come from. They do that. And I come from very much working class background that like paying 1%, like, so right now $3,000 a year, or like as it grows, like $10,000 a year, right? Feels like a lot.
Yeah, it adds up over time. But what I will say is it depends if you're getting value out of it. So I will say, if they are doing the work for you and you're not having to manage this while managing 2 kids with, you know, health issues, and they're making sure that you have the right amount, you know, if you have term insurance, right, that you're covered, that you have an estate plan set up, that you have good investments, you have the beneficiaries, the accounts are growing, Because the 1%, if they're invested well and they're making money, the 1% you really shouldn't notice because you're getting good returns. Now, you're not going to get good returns every year because nobody's a magician. And if for some reason you did get good returns every year and other people weren't, well, that would be a huge red flag, right?
Yeah.
Right, because like, we can only do what the market's doing. But what I will say is your life has gotten more complicated, right?
Yeah.
And so that's usually when it does make sense to pay someone. Not always. Some people enjoy managing it all, but other people say, like, I'd rather outsource it and make sure it's getting done and getting done well. If it's basically you're paying 1% and you talk to them 15 minutes a year, I would not pay for that. Does that make sense? Like, you should have a financial plan. You should know what you're working towards. They should do pension analysis, social security analysis. They should be able to sit down with you and be like, okay, let's talk about social security. You should be staggering this because we're going to have, we have an age difference and we know that, you know, one spouse usually predeceases the other and we don't want to have a gap in income. They should be able to do kind of like what we talked about today. And so you'd be getting something for the 1%. Does that make sense? Like, and you should have people to call when you have questions on things that they could help you with when it comes to your finances. So I think 1% is high when you're only getting like a 1-800 number and like maybe 15 minutes of someone's time and it's only investments. If you're getting financial services, right, where they're giving you a holistic view on your accounts and helping you work towards your goals and making sure it's done well, I think that would be worth it because, you know, I roommate safety would say you should never do it. But for instance, I do it for a living. So I disagree with him. I don't think everybody needs to do it. You know, like if your life was really simple, I would say you're probably fine, but your life has gotten complicated and you're managing a lot. And what I will also say, is the other day we had a client, there's a lot of, we just put out about financial fraud, right? And scams. And so we had a client and the scammers were trying to get her to liquidate her IRA. And I told her, which this is like a little rogue. I was like, I'm sorry, this seems like, you know, I'm concerned about this and your well-being. Like this doesn't align with like what I know for the last 12 years of you. And so I actually wasn't sure I had the authority, but I just said on the call, I was like, I'm going to be putting a freeze on your account because this is highly unusual for you to ask me to give you this much money. I'm concerned about your ability to live on what's going to be left because it was such a large portion of her IRA. And so we're going to call compliance next and I will be back in touch with next steps, but I'm not going to process this distribution you're requesting. So it turns out it was a scam. So if you think about it, the amount of money she saved, the fee, right? Like Ramit Sethi would say that fee was too expensive, but honestly, my fee doesn't even come close to adding up what she would have liquidated that day. It doesn't come anywhere near it. And if it was a 1-800 number, it would have been liquidated.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and that's, I think that is a good point. I think that's that relationship and kind of like the, I guess one other question I have in kind of that part is, so if you have, let's say we roll the 401k into IRA with this company, and then they said like, oh, you can walk away at any time, right? But how, like, what does that actually look like? Like how, you
it's
know?
Actually, it's easier for you to fire the advisor. It's impossible. It's near impossible for the advisor to fire you. It's so hard to fire clients, which is why I'm so, careful because once you get a client in, the amount of steps the advisor has to take to get you out is like, it's a very high bar of like, I have to have like three proven contacts. You don't even need to tell them. If you don't like them, he or she or the firm, you can literally just go to another advisor and they'll, you don't even technically, I don't think it's nice, but you should tell them, but you don't even need to tell them. It would just disappear from their screen. It's unbelievable.
I see. So like if we chose to go somewhere else, it could basically be like rolled over or like brought in by managed by somebody else.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then if you don't like it, you can literally just pull it out like and not notify the advisor. Okay. I recommend that you tell them. It's better communication skills, but it's very easy to leave if you're not happy. And that's what I say. I think there is a value to the relationship. So 1% just to do investments, if it's all you're getting or they're picking investments, is a lot. But if you're getting a relationship and you're getting advice that's going to help you be successful long term, there is a value to those. Like if you think there's like financial crimes can happen to anybody. You do not need to be over 60. It's just very prevalent, but they can protect an asset from that standpoint. You have a relationship and your husband calls to try to take the whole thing out. Hopefully that advisor who has a relationship would be like, wait, why are you doing this? You have two small children. That's not the plan. Like, what's happening? Versus a, you know, a 1-800 number. Not to say that's the only reason, but I think there's a value if there's a service being provided in addition to that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And we did talk. I mean, we met with this firm, and like in general, they're like people who are, they're part of our community. Like they, you know, they're part of a larger firm, but are affiliated, but they're here. And they definitely, that was definitely part of talking about, you know, life insurance, estate planning, and all those other kinds of things, the kind of the whole picture, which I do think is important. Like you said, when you have a busy life, we have not updated that stuff.
You know? Yeah, it that's why I say it, because like I would agree with some of the other, like Ramit Sethi or some of the other advisors or financial experts out there that say like you don't need one, or you know, some say you need them all the time. I disagree, and some say you don't need one at all. And I really think it's in the middle. Like I'm a big moderation person, and I think that when your life starts to get busy and you're not doing it, your finances are so important. If you're not handling it, then I think it makes sense to hire someone who's a professional to take care of it. Now, I have some people who love it and take care of it, right? And they do have complicated, busy lives, but they are really into their finances. So then they maybe wouldn't use somebody. And then you have other people who have very simple finances, right? And their lives, maybe they don't have two children and all these things happening, right? And so I think for your specific situation, it would make sense to consider it. I'd also make sure you're working with a CFP, a certified financial planner. That's how you know you're going to have a fiduciary, because we're fiduciaries. And that's how you know you're going to get a holistic overview. And it's not going to just be that investment account, because it shouldn't be. It should be everything.
Yeah. Yep. And, it is. They are CFPs. And they said that word, fiduciary.
Perfect. Yeah.
I was listening for it.
Yeah. Because the interesting is, like, other people will say they're a fiduciary and they might only be a fiduciary on one account. A CFP is fiduciary in our engagement with an individual. Whether or not we have all your accounts, we're a fiduciary first, like it as the CFP, where some licensing makes you a fiduciary, but only for the account that that license covers. Does that make sense?
That's really important. Yeah. That's an important distinction.
It's a huge distinction, because yeah, you're a fiduciary on that account, but are you a fiduciary about my entire financial life? Not, because I'm not just one account, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and especially I think you're thinking about all the other like complexities and adding possibly other investment options or other things that, you know, there's definitely an importance to understanding kind of the ramifications of those decisions.
Yeah. And that's where like, as like you advance and your life gets more complicated, like if your daughter needed something and you're trying to figure out how to finance it, like having someone to call and say, okay, like this is expensive. Like, should we use the emergency fund? Or maybe your husband's older and has access to his Roth. Should we use the Roth? Because now we're in a high income bracket, like, or we want to make do charitable giving. Should we be using a qualified charitable distribution from the IRA? And this is all later on, maybe not right now, but those are the sort of things that a CFP would help with.
Well, I do think the good part, I think kind of like you hit now, is I think sometimes it'd be easy, like, oh, we'll just wait until we're older to do that. But I do think there's something to be said for not only in terms of like making sure you're kind of staying, having someone who's like, hey, these are your savings goals. Like, you're not hitting them, or, you know, whatever. And then also I think just figuring out some of these other things that get backburnered, right? Like, updating our wills, like there's those things that like, you know, are important, but it's like the important, but not urgent. It doesn't feel urgent, right? It should be urgent, but it gets backburnered because there's so many other things that are, it's, you know.
Well, what I say about finances is it always hits the back burner. Like, you have a flat tire. You can't be like, oh, I'll deal with that. And next month I'll figure that. Even a flat tire, you deal with it then, right? Groceries, you deal with then, right? You have to sign your child up for baseball. You can't miss that. You have to sign them up for baseball. Finance, you can always just wait. You can have an incorrect beneficiary for years. Years. I mean, it gets backburned for years with finance. And so that's like, it's like going to the dentist or the doctor. Having the CFP forces you to have the meeting and have someone say, hey, did you do this? We asked you to do it. Or like a lot of times, at least for my clients, I'll even coordinate the lawyer meeting. Like I'll be in on the lawyer meeting. So like
Yeah. And that was one of the things that they shared. They said, yeah, you know, for example, like some of the estate planning, we can make sure you have everything kind of decided before you go to the lawyer. So
that's exactly
it
costs
you less in the end of the day. I was like, oh, that's a good point. And I do think, I mean, I don't think it's just my background, but I do think there's sometimes these like whether we've heard too many of those financial gurus or, you know, where it's like, oh, I don't, you know, would we be getting our money's worth? But I think you're right, though. I think it's that making sure, obviously it depends on the individual.
Yes.
And right. Personal finance is personal. But I do think it's a good point in particular as I think for us, like as we have more assets and are trying to make kind of choices and set ourselves up for having better options in the future, right? Like you said, for our daughter or for, you know, even just for college. I mean, I think we've saved about
right.
23,000 so far in 529 accounts, but, you know, there's always need more things to spend money on in the future.
Yeah. And that's why your life is like, we have children with medical issues. We have 529s. We have retirement. We're going to have a pension selection, Social Security selection. And yeah, you could wait till you got older for sure. But I think finding someone you like working with and establishing the relationship sooner than later just lends them to help you make sure you get there versus meeting them. It's always a little harder if you, as a CFP, if you meet somebody at 55, they're like, okay, I want to retire at 60. And sometimes they've done a great job and we're like, okay, we're just going to refine some stuff. But also if you get someone younger, it is a little easier to be like, okay, well, here's what we're hitting. You got to raise, let's talk about how we're going to divvy it up. Or let's talk about how we're going to, your child pick a college that's going to be a little outside the budget, but you feel very strongly about it. Like, where are we going to finance it from? It's just someone, it's basically someone to kind of quarterback all of your finances. And it sounds like that's what they would do because the estate planning is 100% correct. My clients, I always recommend they sit with me for an hour first. Don't sit at the attorney's office for an hour discussing this. Let's, you and I discuss it. And yeah. I'll tell you what I think you need. And then you go to the lawyer and say, we've discussed who's going to be the trustee. We discussed who's going to take care of the children, the guardian. We know who the healthcare proxy is, the power. Instead of you and your husband sitting there being like, well, what about your cousin or maybe my cousin at like whatever rate it is an hour.
$500 an hour, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then that way, usually with the CFPs, we will interact just directly with the lawyers. So you're not emailing questions. You call your advisor and say, I got the estate docs. I have a few questions. And then I normally just ping the estate planning attorney myself and say, just want to make sure here are the few questions I have. Like, and then the attorney follows up with me. It's not billable. I'm another professional.
Well, that's good. That's helpful to know. Yeah. I think,
yeah,
it's kind of I don't like to just do things just because everyone else does it. Right. You know, you want to kind of understand what the kind of trade-offs are, what the pros and cons are. And I think that makes, you know, when we met this, I think my husband and I will talk about it more obviously, but we met this firm and like, we'll do some more research and make sure, you know.
And see if you know any, so CFP is great. I would also see if you know anybody else working with them, like in your circle. Need to be a best friend, but see if you know anyone else that's working there and what they're like. Do they get back to you in a timely manner? Like, how responsive are they? Like, what are like, and you want to be work with someone who's not going to give you hard sales. Like, they're there to educate you and help you achieve your goals and not give you a hard sell, right? You don't want to go in and feel like you're getting sold. You want to go in and be educated and assisted to reach your goals. That's the objective. And you might say, you know what, we're going to table this. We don't think we need it this year, but maybe next year, or, you know, something we'd like to do. Yeah. But I do think that it should be more than investments. You shouldn't just be paying 1% for investments. Yeah. That's what I disagree with.
Yeah. That's a really important, I think, distinction that to the layperson might not always be obvious. I think you think like, oh, like they're going to make me more money, right? I think mm-hmm. the general idea is like, well, yes, ideally, if they're doing their job, they'll have good returns, but that's kind of just a portion of it, right?
I would say like a small portion.
Yeah, right?
So I would say in my client reviews that run between an hour and 2 hours, it is like a general overview of the client, like what's happening with your life, what's going on with work, what's going on with the budget, what's going on with the spending, like literally a general update on life. Like, where are we with everything? And then like, where are you with your goals? And like, this is where we are. The returns are really easy, right? Because like, we invest in good stuff, right? There's nothing exciting. I like solid returns, obviously. So like, here are your returns. That's easy. I take care of that. But then it's like really a smaller portion of the review is that it's like the estate plan, like retirement income analysis, tax planning, like where are we with, especially when you get to retirement, that's a huge portion of it. Like, where are we with the taxes? Like, should we, you know, are we moving into another bracket? Do we need to reduce stuff because we're worried about hitting like the Social Security IRMA? There's like a lot more that goes into it than the investments. It's a component of it, but it's not all of it, especially that. And that's the difference between a CFP. That's the big difference, is they're going to look at all of it, your estate planning, the insurance, the retirement, the general investing, the college savings. And then investments are in there, but like, depends on what's happening in your life. It could be 1/6, 1/7, 1/5, you know, and it'll run the gamut. At some point, investments might be a larger portion of your meeting, and other points, investments might be the smallest portion of your meeting.
Mm-hmm. And no matter what, obviously my deferred comp is with where it is. Like, we're not putting all of our retirement investment, obviously, and then also my pension. So we wouldn't even be putting all of it there.
And were there other questions?
I guess one thing I've been kind of going back and forth on, over many years, I feel like, granted, now is probably not the time to make the change in the busy stage of life, but my husband's definitely more of...
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Like a big picture. Like, let's watch what the accounts look like month to month. Like, how much are we spending month to month? And I historically tend to be more of like the detail oriented. Like,
okay,
you know, how much are we spending in these different kind of you know, line or kind of my height? Like, how much are we spending on groceries? How much are we spending on gas or whatever those things are? And like, we both, I think, tend to be frugal. Like, want to be like, we want to spend our money where we care about it,
right?
You know, on things we care about. But I've seen, like, obviously there's a million different budget apps and all the things out there. And I thought, like, as we are kind of entering new stages of life, is it worth, like, I know some of them take more, like, you need a budget, or some of them takes more upfront, like setting up
work,
you know, how to work to do that. Like, when you're working with, I mean, obviously on the podcast or working with, clients, you know, what's that, like, we're spending well within our means. Like in general, we know more or less, like I think we're spending more or less where we want to be spending, but is it worth kind of circling back to one of those kinds of ways to kind of keep more detailed track? Or is, you know, I feel like it's, I think there was a recent episode I heard you talk about, like, you know, the pennies can add up quickly, right? Like the small, I think when you make more money, you're no longer being quite as careful about that, like, your Parmesan cheese, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I said. I think I use Parmesan cheese, yeah.
And I think there is that, when you were talking to that guest, it rang true. I was like, oh, yeah, there is some truth to that, right? And so it's like, how do you find, and part of it is just like individual expenditures, right? But as soon as you don't notice, like, until you're kind of like compiling them, do you have kind of advice or thoughts on kind of that balancing act of like how much to invest in terms of time in that?
Yeah, I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said as you make more money, as life gets busy, because they tend to happen at the same time, usually. Yeah. Like you get married, you buy a house, you have a family, and your income goes up, right? And then you don't have to track it as carefully because you've ideally paid off your loans and you have more bandwidth, so you don't have to. So here's what I will say is I think you need to spend hours setting up the budgeting app so track every dollar? No. I think the key things that you need to make sure are happening is that you're hitting your savings ratio, because you should do that first, which you are. And then second, what I would recommend as a busy individual where you're in this crazy part of life, you know, where you have a lot going on, is I would do like a budgeting, I would almost call it like an inventory, like maybe once a quarter, like go through and monitor and be like, oh yeah, these are the things we don't really, because you're a very values-based spender, and say like, these probably don't anymore align with our values and we would be better served somewhere else. But they were set up years ago, they're auto pays, and like, I didn't really check it. So I'm just going to take a guess that you don't probably want to spend 2 hours on a weekend day.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't have to, but what I would say is to maybe quarterly at worst case, once a year, say for this month, I'm going to look at every expense for this month. It's like kids are both in camp and work is slow and I have bandwidth. And so this is the month, you know, it's July and I'm going to just really check everything. The auto pays. I'm going to see what we really spent this month and then go back and refine it. Because mm-hmm. as long as you're hitting your savings and you're coming in under budget, I don't think you need, like, I agree with, I'm naming him a lot in this podcast, Ramit Sethi, but I would agree that you don't need to worry about every little expense, like you bought two Parmesans instead of one. But I do think it's still good to have an idea of what are your auto pays, where are you spending, and does it still align? Because as you said, it hits the back burner. You're like, you signed up for something and you're like, oh, I'm only going to do it for the 30-day free trial. And then you just forget, right? Because that happens.
Doing
that inventory, I think is fine because it's real life. It's just like you would sit down at the end of the week and be like, what were my expenses? Okay, this all looks right. And then do that for 1 month. And then you might catch some stuff that you don't like on there or that you want to switch. But I would say at this stage of life, as long as you're hitting your savings goals, you have the debt paid off, I don't think you need to spend 3 hours logging every exact expense. I do think that really works well in a certain stage of life, like in the beginning where there's less income and more debt and you have to be mindful of everything. But I like to say you've like upgraded now, you've graduated to where you can just do it a little less intense, but still do it at some cycle, whether it's quarterly or, you know, twice a year where you go through and like really just make sure there's nothing erroneous happening, right? There isn't like a random $10 charge that you didn't approve happening every month.
Yeah, I think that's a great, I mean, especially in this current, I think there's so many subscription services, right?
Yes. Yes.
So it's easy to kind of forget. I just recently had that where it was like, the kids wanted to watch a movie and they had like a cheap deal. So I signed up for it and like have never used it since, right? But then realized like, oh, that's actually, it's like, it was a 6 month trial, whatever, and that's ending. I got to cancel.
Yeah. And that's why even if you did it at worst case, you did it twice a year and you just pick a time where you're just going to monitor it. Cause like I had it happen to me. I went through and did this for myself because I don't have the time with the podcast and the regular business. And I used to have like a monthly spreadsheet for budgeting and tracked everything. I don't have the time to track everything. It's not, and also it's not a good use of my time, if that makes sense.
For sure.
It just, in the beginning of my life, it was a good use because I couldn't afford an extra $50 when I started out with rent and everything. But now at this point, my time is valuable, but I do that where I do in like an audit almost of my spending. And on the audit, I caught some erroneous charges. And one of them was a company and they charged me, I paid for like a single retail usage and they charged me as an entity, like a apartment complex. And it was like $1,000 difference. And they were just like, oh, sorry, we made a mistake. But like, thank God I was doing, I think I did a podcast on it. I caught thousands of dollars of erroneous, wow, like wrong billing in the month I did my audit on my spending. And all of them were just like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. They fixed it. But like, what if I wasn't paying attention?
If you're not paying attention, right? And that's those things I think that it's easy to, it takes a little extra work, but that yes, is worth it, right? Like if you're going to save like $20 on your grocery bill and spend hours.
It's not worth it. And that's the trade-off. And at this point you've graduated, you're doing a great job saving. You're working towards a very comfortable retirement. You're funding the 529s. You're making more money. You've paid off the debt. You've done everything. You do not need to worry about the Parmesan cheese. You can buy as much of it as you'd like, but that being said, because you are busy, you're less likely to catch a mistake and you have bandwidth. So I would do those audits just to make sure no one's erroneously or incorrectly billing you, or that those charges are happening that you're like, oh yeah, actually we haven't watched HBO. Why do we have this?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, an audit takes a lot less time than tracking every expense.
That's a really good point. And I think my spouse is pretty good at watching, like, generally, like, our like, erroneous stuff. He'll be like, hey, is this real, legit? Like, yeah, that's real. Or, you know, oh, no, what is that? But I also think the other thing that we've realized is that I'm sure for many of your listeners who are in the stage of life that we are in, like, we bought before the pandemic, we were refi during the pandemic. Like, we're not moving houses. Like, we kind of are like, we're staying where we are. And so I think that we also have been trying to think about taking some of that, which we are. We actually are doing at least one small renovation, but also thinking about like, okay, if we did have a little extra money to spend on like the driveway or, you know, different things that like are on our list. And I do think that that's, I know before when we were kind of like when you're saying when every dollar matters, it's because you're trying to pay off something, you have a financial goal. I think it's easy to get to the stage of life and like, what's the goal? Like, I mean, yes, retirement is the goal, part of the goal, right? And there's other things, and finding that, and like travel for us is part of the goal.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's hard to like, giving, but it's hard sometimes to make a smaller sacrifice if it doesn't feel like there's like a benefit right away, right? And so I have thought about like, oh, if we want to do the driveway, maybe it's like we cut that extra subscription or whatever it is, like have a little bit of something where we're like, oh, that's going towards that. And so, I mean, we have savings, right? We have money to just pay for something, but there's something to be said to have that goal to kind of change, not to go crazy, but have a little bit of a loss or a little bit of a, like, give up something to have a greater good.
Yeah, it's a mindset shift. And that's exactly it. So like what I would do is I would do the audit, and I would do it with the purpose of like, okay, we want to put some money aside in a house improvement fund because we're never leaving. And then see what you find in your audit and say, okay, like maybe we have like all these just subscriptions. We don't really need them all. So for 6 months, because well, that's the next time I'm going to do my audit, we're going to like cut back on some things and I'm going to put it towards a house fund, or my next raise is going to go through a house fund. And then I would give yourself a set goal, because I do agree the mindset's super important with making a short-term sacrifice, that you have a reason for it and it's not just because, just to save more. I think it has to be tethered to something, like this is going to be for our family vacation to Europe, we're going to save for it now, right? Or it's for the driveway or whatever it is. And you can set those up in the high yield savings account, like where you name it, and then save specifically towards those goals. And you can always rearrange them, like the driveway could turn into like a bathroom project, right? It doesn't have to be a driveway.
The whole house. No, it is funny though that there is, I think it was one of your other recent guests, it's like with home ownership, there's always something, you know, there's always something that happens. So.
Yeah, I was with a friend and he was like, I said something and I was like, he thought he was being mean. I was like, oh, you're lucky you rent. He was like, oh, don't make fun of me because I don't own. And I was like, I'm not making fun of you. Really. As long as you have the right savings ratio and you're saving well enough, I think the disconnect is if you are renting and then not saving and you're getting yourself priced out of the market, like maybe you can't afford to buy where you're living today, but doesn't mean you can't afford to buy in retirement if you wanted to, right? Or continue to rent. You want to make sure you're not getting priced out of like a big rent increase or down the line. Is you're saving the appropriate amount and it's a choice because renting makes the most financial sense for you. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. And it's nice to not be responsible for the washer and dryer or the drainage or the toilet. Like there's a lot of, or like getting the whole house clean professionally because of smoke damage, right? Like there's a lot of things. Yeah. There's nice to be a renter. So
I will say I'm amazed. Our home owners did go up because we had a total vehicle and that major, you know, the house damage in 1 year. And then we also then like last year, we had hail damage on our roof. And I was like, oh no, we are going to be paying up the nose for homeowners. And amazingly enough, maybe it'll take time, but they paid for a new roof and we have not, we paid a little extra for some stuff, but for some new skylights, but.
Wait, who are they?
We have Travelers.
Wow. So, I'm so impressed. That's a lot of claims at once and expensive claims.
So it did go up after the first like renewal after the first two, it did go up, but not like it wasn't insignificant, but it wasn't as much as I expected. And then we had another one.
Given what they've spent, right?
Yeah. So maybe it's a big enough company. I don't know, but I will say that is one other tip that I would, until we had gone through that. Like when we were looking for homeowners insurance, when you're buying our house, we didn't really like, we didn't look at the details, right? We were just like, you know, I knew we wanted like a decent policy, but I didn't really know that much about the details, right? And thankfully we did have a good policy that had really good coverage. So we actually, it took a long time to get everything processed, but we were really fortunate. Like it was for the stuff that got totaled out, like it was replacement value. Like there are all these like nuanced things with insurance that you never want to deal with it, but if you do, you want it there.
Actually, that brings, we should probably do one, an insurance, like understanding your homeowners. We should probably do an episode.
And because, it does apply even for rental, I think, because, you know, people don't understand. They think, oh, I have insurance. I have to have insurance, right? But like we had thousands of dollars worth of stuff that had to be replaced, right? Because it was food or it was perishable or it couldn't be cleaned.
Yeah.
And not to have like the current values, like my 10-year-old couch,
yeah,
like getting what, $200 for it, and you can't buy a new couch with $200.
No. Right?
So
yeah, you want replacement value.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that's funny. When I got my homeowners, the quote came in really low, and the house had been like, I also bought right before COVID. And I had like, I have two kitchens, I have a rental, and they gave me the insurance quote. And I was like, this cannot be correct. I was like, is this replacement value? And then they gave me the number. I was like, okay, so like, that doesn't replace anything. So give me a new quote. And I ended up having to switch insurance companies because they wouldn't give me the insurance amount I wanted. Because I was like, I don't want to be, I'm paying for the insurance and I'd happy to be, I would like a higher premium because I, especially with a home, and like when you add everything in, like a roof is so expensive. Like if there was a fire, like to replace, like you said, smoke damage, like I want to be able to replace the actual couch, which is going to be a different price than what you were assigning it. So yeah, you're completely correct. You want to make sure that if you're paying for the insurance, when you go to use it, they're not like, here's $200. Good luck buying living room furniture. You only paid us a fraction of what you should have paid a year, but you got a deal then. And now.
Yeah. Not a deal anymore. And I always feel for people whenever I hear someone's had a fire or some kind of damage, like major damage, I'm always like, oh, I really hope. And actually my family was okay, but we've had wildfires in our area this year where people's homes burned. They had no insurance, you know?
Yeah. Technically you don't have, once you have your mortgage paid, you don't have to have insurance, right? Once you don't have the bank having a mortgage, but for the value, once again, this is a value, right? A lot of values today, like values of the financial advisor, value spending, but the value you get on insurance, the leverage is usually, it's worth it. You know, able to
happens. It's kind of shocking when you really tally up like how much like the food in your grocery or in your fridge costs.
Pantry. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and then just, your pantry. Always,
yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, we know it, right? You buy it, but you buy it incrementally, right? Or like all those things. So a whole house, I can't imagine. Like, I would imagine, especially for like total or like a house burns completely. They're probably, I would imagine that people hit their max very easily, right? For what they can get.
Yeah, like one of my best friends, her house burned down in Pacific Palisades to the ground. I mean, you should just think about like, you don't realize how much stuff you have and like sentimental. And then like, it's very jarring to go from having a house to not having a house. And then, yeah, you want to hope at the end of that traumatic experience that your insurance will replace everything, right? For, you know, you can't replace sentimental stuff, but yeah, you want to go get the same sneakers, but you don't want it to be at a fraction of what the sneakers cost, right? You can't buy 1/4 of a sneaker or like new clothes. I mean, you have no wardrobe also, like if your house burns down.
Barbie, we're coming full circle. It's like why we have emergency fund too.
Yeah, exactly. Just because you don't want to be clothless, you know, depends what you pack in the heat of an emergency. You're not thinking clearly if you're rushing for your life. But yeah, well, Minnie, we talked about a lot today. This was a long episode for a follow-up. Yeah.
I know. I can't believe it. I don't know if I should apologize or think. I definitely want to thank you.
Yeah, no, it was fun to chat with you again. I think this is a great episode for our listeners as we went through a lot and now you're an OG. So we're seeing all the great progress, which is amazing.
Yeah. And I think just, it does go to show that I think sometimes like the flashy, like, oh, we paid off all this debt. And of course those are important things, but I think it's like the slow and steady is what really adds up over time. Like it is important for sure. Like pay down that debt, especially for folks who have high interest debt. Like it's great to get that taken care of. But I also think that it's harder sometimes to keep at it when it's like over time, like little bit by little bit, but it definitely does pay off. I mean, when I looked at our totals for retirement, it's like, oh, like we're actually finally like catching up here.
It's amazing what the boring, consistent, long-term work will do to your financial picture. But I mean, it's not exciting and nobody ever wants the answer that you just have to save and pay down debt and be consistent. Everyone's like, well, how do we do it faster? I'm like, well, that's the only way to, like, the best way to succeed, the most obvious and proven track to being financially independent, financially sound, is good, consistent daily habits long term. Like pretty much everything. Like, if you're going to be an expert in your career field, if you're going to be like really physically fit, it's like that little thing you do every day, right? And then it makes for a very successful setup.
Well, thanks, Barb. Appreciate the time today.
Yeah, absolutely. And for all of our lovely listeners, if you'd like to be a guest, we have a few more slots left and we're recording over the summer, and you can apply at www.futurerichpodcast.com or send us a message on Instagram. And if you like the podcast, it would be great if you subscribe and or like us. You can follow along on our Substack, and we have a weekly newsletter. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.